Good evening and welcome to Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Jack Lepiarz. Tonight we have a lecture presented by the Boston University Frederick S. Pardee School of Global Studies and the Center for the Study of Europe titled Strangeness from Within, Toward a Novel. Our speaker is French author Patrick Autreio, and we begin with an introduction by tonight's moderator, Boston University Professor of French Odile Cazeneuve.
Patrick Autreio is not a stranger to us. I mean, he has come to OrToBU. He has come a few times, given several talks in different venues, either during seminars or giving a reading. He published poetry throughout while studying medicine and cultural anthropology, published poetry, reviews of contemporary art. In 2006, after practicing as an emergency room psychiatrist, he decided to dedicate himself entirely to writing. He has published several texts from Dans la Vallée des Larmes, that is going to be forthcoming in translation in the Valley of Tears. And the translator, I believe, is in the room, Eduardo Febles. Thank you for being here. And Soigné came just afterward. And then Le Dedans des Choses, all novels published by Gallimard. Or I should say texts published by Gallimard. And you will see why I'm making the difference and how today maybe this is a point that Patrick Autreio is going to explore for us or re-explore from a different angle. He also published in 2015 Les Irréguliers by Gallimard, with Gallimard, which is a novel. And then again, I think this is what you're going to address today, on illegal immigrants in France. He has also what could be viewed as a standing poem, Le Grand Vivant, published at by Verdier, and that was produced in 2015. It was part of the 2015 Avignon Festival, the Inn. In 2017, he published La Voix Écrite, also published by Verdier, which is a narrative between literature and medicine that can also be seen as really recognizing or eulogy to certainly a friendship with an older person, but and there is certainly some reminiscence to Pontalis. And with that note, I want to thank you for giving us this pleasure today, maybe along the format of what you have approached in your seminar this semester, which is giving us a reading and then followed by question and answer. And so I'll be happy to moderate this time of question and answers. Thank you, Patrick, for being here.
So thank you, Odile. Thank you to Elizabeth also and to the European Center to welcome us. And thank you for all for being here. And just before diving into this lecture, I would like to ask for your indulgence. I will try my best not to speak like Jacques Pépin and Maurice Chevalier and avoid to impose my French accent. But in a way, we are a team. But it will be an example of intrusion of a stranger into the English language in front of you. So for years, my publisher asked me to write a novel. Rather than comply, I undertook the writing of a cycle of texts about illness, a cancer, and the self, which I might describe as biographical self-fiction. Maybe I needed to write those books in order for the desire to write another type of fiction to reveal itself, in order, that is, for those figures and locations lurking in the dark room you enter when you begin to imagine a narrative, and above all to create an atmosphere, to steadily obsess my thoughts, in order for an inner landscape and reemergent voices to demand a form that I could truly call a novel. That is what happened once I finished writing my preceding book, Se Survivre, in 2013. I grasped the message being sent to me from that inner realm. My next book would be indeed a novel. I battled with several rough drafts. None of them got the upper hand. I drafted beginnings, then dropped them. Other paragraphs flowed, only to run dry. I had to let them blossom if they soon withered. As is well known, you don't choose to write a book. The book chooses itself and you. And we remain oblivious to the arbitrary circumstances that make us aware of an inner presence that abruptly imposes itself, only to suddenly slip away, signaling the existence of a potential book. That's what writing is, an attempt to put flesh on a hazy figure and to finally fill, through words, the empty shell of an inspiration that came to you and pointed to the vision to be seized. And then there came a phone call. 1 hour later, I found myself in the middle of the woods of Vincennes, on the outskirts of Paris, standing in front of a detention center where one of my close friends had just been taken. He had been living in France for several years, but failed to obtain the status of political refugee and decided to risk the unpredictability of his illegal status rather than return to his home country. He had a job and had managed to find an apartment and was living an almost normal life. Then came the shock. He was suddenly in danger of being deported back home, and I realized I might never see him again. So while I paced up and down among the other families waiting there, trying not to think of my friend's fate, trying to ignore the wild imaginings and the chilling effect of the solitude of everyone around me, I was visited by an inner voice, the voice of the Russian poetess Anna Akhmatova. In her preface to Requiem, Akhmatova recounted how someone had recognized her when she was standing in the long line before the prison in Leningrad, where her son was incarcerated during the worst of Stalin's purges. That person bent toward her and asked in a whisper, "Couldn't you describe all this?" "Yes," replied Akhmatova, "I can." Against all odds, the authorities let my friend go. Thanks to one of those weird twists in the administrative process, we celebrated his release and he returned to his risky life. It wasn't the first time he had been arrested like that. But that evening's adventure wasn't over for me either. My visit to the detention center left a deep mark on me. Something had happened there. I could sense its complexity. I realized, all in a jumble, that there was the shock and anger I felt at the center, confronted with the subjective reality of such places when a loved one is imprisoned here, there. And there were Akhmatova's words. Then there was my own baggage, the freedom that I had tried to breathe into my earlier book, and the difficulty I had in accepting any kind of shackle, for I, too, was an escapee, if only from a cancer that was ultimately curable. And there was also the conflict between a mother and her son, which Akhmatova had sparked, for I knew she had a stormy relationship with her son and that he harbored lasting resentment against her. Finally, there was the idea for a novel that I had been mulling over for a while, to write the story of a Phaedra-like character as seen by her son, which meant a narrative based on a son's view of his incestuous mother. Immediately after my brief odyssey to the Vincennes Detention Center, the presence of a book made itself felt within me. It probably arose not from a personal interest in the topical issue of undocumented workers, but from the parallel convergence of the reality I had just experienced, of my own personal history, of a latent plan, and finally, of a sense of timelessness that recollection of Akhmatova's text had triggered in me while waiting outside the detention center. It was this timelessness that I tried to reinvent through the narrative that nudged the text toward fiction and that provided me with the soul of the book. Here is a brief summary of the novel that emerged, called Les Irréguliers, as printed on the back cover of the book. A telephone call alerts Yvon that his friend Virgilio has been arrested and taken directly to a detention center in Vincennes, where undocumented immigrants are held prior to deportation. Yvon sets off to see Virgilio. After a long wait on both sides of the gates of the center, Yvon manages to exchange a few words with him, his last words. The imminence of the loss of his lover rekindles Yvon's memory of the tragic fates of his brother and mother, two huge voids in his life. Written like the confession of a secret, this novel combines a romantic tragedy with the inner voyage of a man in search of reconciliation. It reveals how others can become our inner guides. At first, I began writing that novel as a personal account inspired by this exotic situation and a desire to reveal all. But very quickly, the timelessness mentioned above, the impression that time had become completely conflated that evening, insisted on being heard. My actual experience, which was supposed to be transformed into a tragedy of two lovers who were separated, had triggered a condensation of historical time within myself. Sometimes, personal events spur us to revisit certain periods of time. We suddenly view with puzzlement history from an intimate perspective that enables us to feel it physically, in the flesh, in ourselves. That's exactly what happened here. Reality summoned up characters from earlier periods in history, even as it revealed its own layered structure in my mind. I had been personally overwhelmed by an event that immediately thrust me into a more impersonal sphere. This, I feel, is what constitutes literature, whether it be fictional or autobiographical, to ground the impersonal in the intimate. And the intimate is not just personal, it is the very substance of inner life. Because once the timelessness of every narrative, of all writing, surfaces, the act of grounding suddenly produces a blurred vision. Or, to be more precise, it reveals a presence that reflects the experience of an individual caught in a movement that transcends him or her, ultimately leaving that individual stuck in reality. Or stuck in the mud, something that is constantly present throughout Les Irréguliers. If I summoned up the ghost of Anna Akhmatova when discussing the origin of my novel, it's because she subsequently disappeared from the book. There are several reasons for that. First of all, I've never warmed to Akhmatova. And even though I can understand her bitterness over certain historic circumstances, I did not want to adopt her as a fellow traveler and guardian author. The other reason is more technical. I don't like dropping quotations into a story. I use them only when they are inherently needed by the narration thread. I prefer allusions to quotation, given that the latter imply a scholarly or authorial attitude, a narrowing of meaning. Thus, this novel, like my earlier books, is dotted with allusions, plus a few abbreviated quotations, although not identified as such. Allusions are a playful note to the reader, inclusive, without imposing or hammering anything. They are a simple, discreet way of sharing. They are also, and above all, an absent presence. I am profoundly convinced that texts retain the scars of anything that is cut or pruned from them. When you look at a given landscape, you can often identify filtered traces of the effects of time on it, often from long, long ago. They are not perceived explicitly, only through traces. Something remains of the work of recomposition done by humans and by time. It creates a kind of presence, like the accent in a voice, what was once called the ghost within the language. It's pretty much the same with a book. Traces remain. Books have their own accent and intonation. The process might be explained as follows. When a digression, a sentence, or a scene is cut, the thrust of the text is knocked off balance. Sentences have to be corrected and the attitudes of characters have to be adjusted. Removal triggers a change that leads the text toward its final shape, but there always remain invisible sutures, not recognized as such. They place the text in a configuration that was not really predetermined by the author. The fact that the substance of the text has been reduced, and I use reduce in a culinary sense or chemical sense also, inevitably leads to changes. I feel that a text only becomes a book when, through the pressure of writing, through the effect of additions and corrections, it organizes itself in part around its own inertia, its own erosion, its own peaks and valley, a phenomenon not unrelated to the self-organization of biological systems constrained to a specific context. In this respect, my writing and my conception of the novel are probably close to poetry. If a novel is not written with a degree of non-volition, I don't mean in an involuntary way, but with an intermittent abandonment of the desire for control, then it will have no life of its own. It will remain an inert puppet, a prisoner of the overly controlling hands of his author. It will never come insolently alive. Now, the occasional abandonment of control, which does not mean a negation of mastery, perhaps favor what I feel is indispensable to all writing, the sudden intrusion of the alien, the unexpected, the new. To illustrate this phenomenon, let me refer to an essay by the philosopher Jean-Luc Nancy, titled L'Intrus, The Intruder. This book is a reflection on the concept of foreignness, on the intrusion of something foreign into the body, whether that be a private body or, as he suggests, a public one. Stricken with a serious heart disease, Nancy required a transplant. He thus explored a paradoxical situation where boundaries become blurred. Given his failing heart, the alien surged from within. The self became foreign. Whereas the foreign, that is a transplant, by intruding, became a life-saving other within the self, yet was still rejected by the self in the form of antibodies, to the detriment of that same very self. Similar crucial experiences can occur without disease, without being stricken. They can be triggered by a passionate love affair, by the death of a loved one, or by psychoanalysis. Regarding this latter, I refer you to a book by Pierre Fédida, Le Site de l'étranger, which might be translated as The Site of Foreignness, a place as well as a time when the unexpected suddenly erupts, when our verbal chain of associations, while recounting a fading memory or dream, suddenly gives rise a voice that is simultaneously self and foreign, estranging us from ourselves. To return to my novel Les Irréguliers and its place in my work, I've referred to Nancy's essay in order to shed light on the link between the writing of autobiographical novels and the writing of fiction. My autobiographical work was about illness and the self, about the nodal experience of a self without self, or I without me, a moment when I left myself behind, and I quote, Dans la vallée des larmes, in the valley of tears. While this fiction deal with a moment when separation and loss of love completely empty you and estranging you from yourself, when the stranger who has entered your heart, yourself, becoming part of yourself, is torn out and becomes an intruder. You become alien to yourself. Now, paradoxically, it is as a stranger to yourself that you can experience what Nancy describes, and I quote, "The most absolutely proper I withdraws to an infinite distance and subsides into an intimacy more profound than any interiority. The truth of the subject is its exteriority and excessivity, its infinite exposition. The intruder exposes me excessively. It extrudes, it exports, it expropriates." And also my character, Yvon, is first of all confronted with a reality that dashes any hope of living with Virgilio, making him aware of his own impotence and their mutual solitude. His lover's arrest also guides him internally toward his own past, toward the incestuous story of his mother and half-brother, toward the recollection of his half-brother's guilt, and the memory of his mother's own stories, for she was persecuted as a child and exiled during the war. This past becomes timeless as it collides with the present, with memories, and with recollections of history. And I think that is how this character attains the tragic and perhaps become aware of what Schopenhauer called the apparent deliberateness of fate. And you may have noted that also I don't like quotation in a narrative. I'm making free use of them today. Tragedy, said the ancients, is fate stripped bare. And I think if we are so disturbed by the sudden appearance of migrants, refugees, displaced persons, exiles, and other undocumented individuals, it's partly due to the intrusion of tragedy at our doorstep. Indeed, a real-life tragedy. Their history inevitably echoes our own past as well as a possible future, and it revives the stranger within ourselves, a buried awareness. Indeed, as Nancy wrote once again, the intruder is no other than me, myself, no other than man himself. The profound turmoil that troubles the character of Yvonne is not only romantic. The tragedy here is not about embedded love. And even if some critics view this novel as a metaphor of love, it is above all another novel about time coming to a halt in the mind of the narrator. In this space-time, we are overwhelmed by an intrusion, whether it be the abrupt intrusion of love, of loss, or of law. In this timelessness, we learn to wait for what will emerge from the upheaval. Foreign body and antibody, that is a fight inhabiting us. This biological vocabulary is also being implicitly but deliberately used by a political movement that advocates the closing of borders and buildings of walls. Yet, in making this kind of comparison, we realize with surprise that the foreigner is not necessarily the one we were thinking of, than that an illness of the self, whether private body or social body, is a more threatening intruder than foreigners. Writing also estranges you from yourself. Writing means being your own intruder. To write about a trauma, about the blank, this full empty sensation that I made the core of my accounts of sickness, transforms all subsequent literary undertakings. Thus, I try to discover for myself what the writer of the Gulag, Varlam Shalamov, in his correspondence with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, called the prose of the future. It is that prose, personal to each of us, which usually requires a confrontation with death and an awareness of the precariousness, whether imposed or embraced, of our lives. This prose is also what Montaigne called the constant fluctuation, le branle éternel, that we usually try to overlook despite all evidence to the contrary. By setting aside that which is ourselves, we make it foreign, and thus we no longer see the stranger in ourselves who embodies that truth. Indeed, is a vital symbol of it. So, we are in danger of mistreating the most fragile things in ourselves, what is probably the most private and most external aspect of our consciousness. I could only write that kind of novel after having thought I was dying, after having written about the unwell self, after having doubly experienced the arrival of a stranger, a cancer, and the resulting intrusion, that is, to paraphrase Nancy, the experience of the stranger who never stops arriving. experiencing illness made me more aware of my membership in the human race, and thus more enthusiastic about its endless cultural variety. A little like the experience of those space pioneers who traveled beyond the Earth's boundaries. Being excluded from humanity by the certitude of our death can sometimes give us a profound awareness of that same humanity, of its oneness. Perhaps somewhat naively, when I was ill, I felt like one of those astronauts struck by the vastness of space and the solitude of Earth. I felt that I belonged, as do all of us, to this unique humanity. And I also experienced, at a gut level, the relativity of borderlines and identities, whether imposed or chosen. I had an almost religious experience that shattered history itself, which of course does not refute it, but which recognizes that somewhere beyond, there is an all-encompassing vision. By shattering all certainty of simplistic identity, the overview effect I experience, whether as hallucination or wisdom, idealism or pragmatism, truly transformed me as a human being and as a writer. And it still summons up a profound cry every time sometimes someone denies and dodges the burden of mutual solidarity, notably what the philosopher Paul Ricoeur called the solidarity of the stricken, la solidarité des éprouvés. That cry resulted in a novel that seeks to point out that by refusing to let yourself be overwhelmed or disturbed, by rejecting all intrusion, you blind yourself to paths of self-knowledge, of healing, and sometimes of survival. By rejecting the alien, by refusing to welcome it, we diminish ourselves both by our refusal to follow the moral lessons of the previous century's colossal catastrophes, to mention only those, and above all, by our reluctance to accept what the intruder, as a stranger, can help us accomplish and understand about ourselves. I will conclude by returning to the writer I am, to that writer I was when I stood in front of the detention center in hopes of seeing my friend. I realize that that experience is, even as it confirmed the coherence of my autobiographical writing up to that point, led me to the threshold of a literary genre new for me. By conceptualizing the intrusion of that tragedy into my life, I let myself go off the rails and thus finally entered the coveted realm that was still rejecting me, the realm of the novel. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick, for such a beautiful reading and talk. It's very rich. I'm sure that we are many with many questions. What strikes me is that in this talk, I see some of the threads that you explore and work with in your previous texts and novels. And I'm thinking of Le Dedans des Choses, where you're looking at each element, almost not just like the treasure box, but taking them out and looking at them, laying it out flat, and then seeing what makes it or how it is constituted, how it is composed. And here it is also the process of the, not just the writerly process, but what is the path to writing from a récit or from a text, from a personal text, from whether it is autobiographical or not, to a novel. And this is something also that in La Voix Écrite, you undertake differently, but also similarly. So here you address in a novel way and taking a different tack and from a fresh angle, what does it mean to be writing a novel? And in this case, what does it mean to be writing a novel when the departing point is something that is as topical and current as illegal migration or detention centers or violence in the social landscape and the risks for someone to be ready to be at risk as an illegal migrant rather than going home, for instance, which was one of the articles today published in Le Monde about some young people preferring to be taking that risk rather than going home. And so here you explore it beautifully, but you create also a parallel cartography about crossing borders and what it means here when it is when it has to do with the novel and writing. So thank you so much for this exploration. And maybe I have a few questions, but I maybe let the audience ask some questions.
And right through, you talk a lot about timelessness. And if I remember rightly, the moment when you felt this was to be a novel, you felt timelessness, and you talk about the intimacy of history. And could you talk a little bit about what you mean by history? I mean, because when I think of history, I think of big events and so on.
Yeah.
But I think you might mean something different.
Not really. Well, the situation was this one. I was in front of the detention center, and it was a winter. It was muddy everywhere and very gray. And it was during the winter, so every trees were without leaves. And suddenly there was this light, which was the light of the moon, I don't know. And suddenly I had just a vision of a film on concentration camp. And so there was a clash of the idea I can have of concentration camp and the images I have from the film, mainly or from some photograph, and what I was experiencing. And at that moment, I had the impression of, and also because of the stress of the situation, I had the impression that there was no time anymore at that moment. And that's what I mainly mean in this way, that the very intimate is meeting another part of the time, another part of history. And that's why I really wanted to dive into this idea to create a novel with this idea as this vision as a core in the novel, because I didn't want to make a comparison between the detention center and the concentration camp. It was not possible to compare, but there was a collusion between both, and I wanted to understand what was the reality of this collusion, even though this collusion was through my own consciousness, through me. So that's why I was saying that.
I enjoyed your talk very much. I'm wondering, I was wondering as you were talking about the dimension of intrusion, whether the Freudian notion taken up by Laplanche very seriously of the alien internal entity, that is something, a message that is not understood, but it is early on deposited within the hearing of the young subject, a subject that will spend the rest of his life translating, mistranslating, retranslating, detranslating with the psychoanalyst. I was wondering whether that particular notion, which was so important to Laplanche, in which I once heard Pontalis mock, as a matter of fact, where you stand vis-à-vis that.
I didn't want to go into the psychoanalyst field. probably that's that's why I remain with Nancy, because I think I preferred the distinction between stranger and intrusion, which is not always done, actually. The concept of being a stranger, enter as a stranger in a society and make intrusion in a society, and or in a body. And I wanted to stay on that that two distinction. And it's obvious for me that Nancy has his background, has a Laplanche and Freud background, actually. I don't know if I answer clearly. I open it, yeah. Part of it I don't want to enter it, but...
I have a question regarding the novel that we read in class with Professor Cazenave. And obviously when Yvon goes to the center, to the camp, he triggers something that pushes him to listen to his inner voice and inner life. But I was also stricken by the term, by him and these people that he met there not being able to like communicate, and he calls them les Maghrébins. He says ça parle. So I was wondering if like at the meeting with the other triggered something for himself, but then it's still like a fell meeting with the other.
Yeah, I think so. In the beginning, at the end of the novel, there is a connection which is coming with a family he has met on the detention center.
Yes.
But I think in the beginning, in this situation of stress and in this situation of strangeness, of being a stranger even in front of the detention center, you feel as a stranger. And I think in front of a detention of this kind of places, everybody feels a stranger to the other. And there is something which is not developed in this novel. The real situation was that, in fact, there was a lot of aggressivity also in front of the detention center, because I looked like a white guy, and there was a kind of aggressivity against these French who do that to our family and so. And so in the beginning, think people. Because most of the time, it's African families, Maghrebin families. They were seeing somebody who was different, and for them, I think for this family, it was very difficult to express their aggressivity towards the police, because everybody in front of the detention center was afraid not to be able to enter the detention center to visit the family. And so there is fear in front of the police. And suddenly a stranger was coming. He was a French. And this French guy, you know, it's your country. It's your... You do that to our people. There was this kind of situation which was... very puzzling for me, because suddenly I realized that in such situation there is no fraternity in this kind of moment. In the beginning, leaves you only in your own personality, leaves you in yourself. And it's very difficult in during the beginning of a misfortune, till the moment you realize that you can do something of it. Most of the time, you are not in a communication level. You're more on an aggressive level, a survival level. I think why the beginning of the text is it has this kind of Everybody is stranger to everybody in this situation, in the beginning, in the front of such a center. Actually, Akhmatova, that's why probably in a book Requiem was so famous, is that in her preface, you feel that there is a strong individuality in each person, and it's very difficult to communicate the communication is very difficult between the person in front of a prison where everybody is threatened. Yes. But
I have a question about this sort of metaphor that you, I think, have placed between, or comparison between, foreignness and intrusion and cancer and illness and sort of intrusion of the body. And from what I understand, you've been saying about your previous novel that sort of having cancer, experiencing it, it's sort of a transformative experience. It changes the self. But of course, cancer is transformative to the extent that you survive it and sort of live to tell the story, right? I want you to talk a little more about sort of the value of comparing sort of foreignness and strangeness to something that actually perceived by most people as scary.
I'm not really comparing.
Okay.
I was using the metaphor of Nancy and the stranger and the intrusion to make the distinction between stranger and intrusion, which is, according to me, different. Even though you remain a stranger as long as you are still an intruder. And I think what I wanted to compare is not stranger and disease. It's not this point, because this can be this is done actually usually by politicians. What here is suggested is that through the presence of a stranger, the writer feel an intrusion that leads him to a foreign realm that is a novel. So it's through the writing that you have to understand this comparison. It's not a basic comparison with cancer and stranger, of course not.
Got it. Thank you.
And also, I did not develop Nancy's essay. His essay is very interesting because he's talking about a art transplant. And he's talking about the stranger, the art, from another, who is put into your body, and then the stranger who saves you, and in the same time, the antibody reaction that is yourself and which is going to kill you. So there is a paradox here that I found very interesting to understand, even my own way to the novel, because it was true reality, through a kind of a very autobiographical reality, which was a friend of mine and my experience in front of a detention center, that in fact I was able to go to the novel, which was rejecting me because I could not write a novel at that time.
Patrick, I really enjoyed your talk in general, and especially when you talked about how it's written like the confession of a secret. And I was wondering, in that writing process and this abandonment of control, did you imagine, or a public, or was it changing? What role does the audience play in your creative process? Is there an audience, or does it change? Who are you writing for? Someone in mind?
That's a difficult question. I would say that I am very often I'm writing for an invisible and difficult to recognize face in me. And so the text is addressed to somebody, but it's not a public. It's not an audience. It's not the public who is going to read the book. It's another kind of face in me, that face or ears. I don't know, a presence that I'm not talking to it, but I'm writing probably for it. Or maybe to be closer to it. Something like this. But which is, of course, very different from the audience and the people who read the book when it's published or written. I think there was, sorry to refer to psychoanalysts, but it was said once that... Writers were talking, writing to an absent figure or maternal or parental absent figure, probably. I don't know if it's the case, but it is very similar to what I feel, actually. And it's not a writing of grief. It's not a loss. It's not a grief. It's not the absence of somebody who is dead. It's really different. It's some kind of presence in you, which is absence in the same time. And it's this interaction that is a kind of inner witness.
Sounds like the intruder.
Yeah.
I want to thank you all for coming today, and thank you for your generosity in sharing with us your ideas and your passion for literature and the demonstration of beautiful writing. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
This is Boston University's World of Ideas. You just heard a lecture by French author Patrick Otreo titled Strangeness from Within. Toward a Novel. Our lecture was presented by the Boston University Frederick S. Pardee School of Global Studies and the Center for the Study of Europe. Tonight's moderator was Boston University Professor of French Odile Kazanov. For a CD of Boston University's World of Ideas, call 1-800-909-9287. You can also go to our website, wbur.org, to hear archived editions of this and all other WBUR programs. Tonight's program was produced by Mike Toda and Michael Garth with help from Matt Lissette. The executive producer of Boston University's World of Ideas is Peter Lydonis. I'm Jack Lepiarz. Thanks for joining us.